September 6, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Happy Monday. Happy Labor Day. No parade. Watch guys sore back, but I was still with a fucking hub and done. Three Little Words, John Coltrane with Milt Jackson. They used to call him Bags, right? Bags and Train.
Yeah.
It's a record. Yeah, right. Upsilon Acrex after that, or Nah Cult Man. And you could tell people probably that I ain't Man Alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got the Paul Lai. Welcome aboard, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike.
And Taipei?
Yeah, I'm in Taipei right now.
Which is a big town in Taiwan. One day I want to play there. I really, really want to play there. I have had buddies who played there and dug it. And you know, one day I would like you to. And we got to thank Steve over at Curiana Forum for the connect. Thank you, Steve.
I think in the DC. All thanks to Steve.
DC area, right?
Yeah.
And, okay, tripping on your music journey. I know you spent some time in, you know where Pedro is, right, where the harbor, because you live in here.
Yes.
I want to go before that, right? I want you to bring us the earliest musical memory you can.
Earliest musical memory. I came from Taiwan to America in 1980. So I think the first band that I realized was a band, because there weren't really any bands in Taiwan at the time. I mean, there were, but I was unaware. I was 8 years old. So I think I saw Kiss trading cards, and I was like, oh, this is what a band looks like. And I was pretty freaked out, I have to say. I was 8 years old, you know, coming from Taiwan. I hadn't even really been around white people until I came here. So, and then there were these guys, you know, dressed like monsters, you know.
Yeah. But what about, there's no music memories of Taiwan when you're a boy, baby?
No, there's like, you know, like traditional songs that I'm used to hearing, like New Year's and during the holidays, you know. But I really, even though like my parents did force me to play piano and violin for like a year each before I came here.
So
once I came here, I dropped it.
There was instruments in the pad, or was this from school?
No, this is, they got me lessons. They just, I think, you know, my parents always did whatever the best they could do for me, even if I was not a good kid. But I think those things eventually did, you know, they did work out. I mean, it got my mind moving in the right direction. But I think the first thing that I bought on my own is I bought the Thriller tape, the Michael Jackson Thriller tape.
Right, Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, what about school over there? Did they have a music program? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, they didn't have any of that shit. I mean, where I was from, we're in Taizong, which is kind of the middle of Taiwan. For activities, there wasn't even, like, basketball or soccer or anything. It was late 70s, you know, so.
Yeah, I don't know, because I ain't been there yet, but I'll trust you. What about when you come here, because you're 8 and stuff, what about the school stuff over here?
I didn't get into music. I was, you know, I was just trying to like learn the language, and I did that just like through, Bugs Bunny cartoons and, you know, whatever. That's all I remember. Like third grade was just trying to learn the language, like, so I didn't have an accent. And, it was tough, but, you know, America was different, really different, you know.
What about, I can imagine, but, I mean,
you
end up on guitar. There must have been, besides maybe the Kiss trading cards and the monster look, how did you get your hands on the guitar? What made you want to jump on that? Since you kind of had two bad experiences with the violin and the piano, right? It might have been the teachers, though, huh? Maybe more than the instruments. Or maybe just you, where you were as a kid.
Yeah, I think at that age, you know, I'm sure Mozart was writing orchestras at that age, but I wasn't like, I just wanted to play, you know, I just wanted to like play outside. But so I got eventually, like, I think it was when I was 14, I finally had like a real favorite band, and that was The Cure, you know, with Robert Smith.
I got to meet that guy once for a few minutes. He's really good at ping pong.
Really?
And a few words, but he was very kind. Yeah, Jay opened up for him at the Rose Bowl, and it was a trippy thing. I even got to play a song, not with him, but with Jay. But
I think I was at that show, actually.
So was somebody else that was just on the show was at that show, too. They were like, boys. Well, what was the first gig you saw, Paul?
The first show that I paid money to see was actually, I think it was Echo and the Bunnymen on the Killing Moon tour or the Ocean Rain tour. It was like in 85 or maybe. And then I saw The Cure. And I don't think I've ever, you know, how when you're 15, like you never love a band more than you're at that age, you know. So when I saw The Cure, I was like, I was just like frozen, you know, to be in the room with Robert Smith at that time was like, you know, he was my everything, you know. And I always say it was
lips.
A great thing.
He had bright lips. Big yeah. hair, too. And his pants were tucked in his shoes. But I tell you, the dude could play some ping pong. And he was kind. He was nice. He wasn't a dick.
That's amazing. I've heard only good things about
him.
You
know, Jay's a man a few words, too. You know, some cats are just like that. But when it's time to do music, they're fucking dope. Yeah, he don't talk like that, crying stuff. And, you know, and Jay, very quiet voice, but his lead guitar is like... So what was the first guitar you got?
I thought I was buying a guitar like Robert Smith. I bought, like, basically what I ended up getting was just a black... With the black pickguard American Standard Stratocaster. I thought it looked like what he had, which was a Jazzmaster. But I think I was 17, and I didn't realize it. And that was my first guitar, American Standard Black Stratocaster.
Did you get an amp?
I don't know what the amp I got was. It was probably just some shitty, like, practice amp or something. All I did was I bought that, and I think I bought a flanger pedal.
So you bought it with your own money, right?
No. Instead of getting a car when I was 17, I asked my parents to give me a guitar and amp.
Oh, that's bitching.
Yeah. I think they regret that, actually, but...
Well, in Pedro, you'd have to have both, I guess. But, you know, the recycler, you probably remember that pink paper came out on Thursdays. Oh, God, everything
I owned
came out of that motherfucker.
I know.
The ads were free, people. Even ads were getting bands and shit. I answered one. D-Boo wouldn't make a punk band at first. I only did one jam where there was 3 hours of I Want to Be Your Dog. It wasn't even the other part. It was just the first. So, look, you gave me a lot of this Epsilon Acres, and I want to play Waka.
Okay.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start out of that chunk of music with Epsilon Acrux. It's a name, man. Awaka, which is a lot of cats that live in this area come from there. Bombas Prendon, they got a brand new release. I think they did this by jamming together over the internet somehow, giving it enough space so they didn't have to deal with latency. The very first track, so I guess this was the first attempt, but it's a whole fucking collect. Pretty happening. Victoria Shen and Aaron Dillaway with the hair gag excerpt. Victoria Shen took two of her record and Aaron Dillaway, like half of each, and cemented them together and then played it, you know. And then that makes the new record. That's what you guys heard. Okay, then P. Kane featuring Amel. It's not the Amel that I think. The punk day, right? Disco thing. I think Paul Lynn, they found a bottle of that. Tunnel. Brand new record. He's got a bitchin' album, people. Part 1 of 8 from Bill Nace. A piece called Both. He just floated to me. Guess he's getting nervous here. Got to hurry, people. Rang Cap Dui Collective from Vietnam with Eri, 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 Rama, 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 Rama. That's a title. Modo Manata Balmar with Cinemarina. Dearest Samuel Locke Ward from Iowa City with Ah. Weeding Out the Mambrium Wax Mulch. James Twig Harper and Rubber O Cement. And finally, Epsilon Acrux. Twice the Tweak. Don't want to know what that's about. Okay, yeah. Paul, so was there stipulation like with the fucking violin and piano? Like, if we get you this guitar instead of a... Well, you probably had driving lessons from school or shit, but like, you're going to have to take guitar lessons?
No, because I had a friend. I had moved to Orange County from San Diego County, which was horrible. But I had a friend whose name was Mike DeFabio, and he played bass. And he was like, "No, I'll teach you." And I have a teacher. And I think I ended up going to one lesson. I didn't take it like real seriously. I thought it was going to be kind of easy, and it was really hard initially. So even though my goal was just to play like Robert Smith. So okay. After a few years, I did eventually get there, but only took like a couple of years. But then I just stagnated.
How'd you do it? Like by listening to Cure records? I mean, that's how me and V Boone. Well, there was this guy who showed his shit. He lived in his car. Roy Mendez Lopez, great guitar. Built his own guitars and stuff. But this bass player, he helped you a little bit.
He knew how to play guitar would, also. He knew how to play bass. Like he could play like Cure songs, and he would show me like. You know, like the lead part to like just like Heaven, take me like a month or something to learn.
The bass guy's the first guy they got rid of, right? Or he quit. And I think the recent guy just quit after 20, 30 years or something. But
yeah, I'm really bummed about that actually.
But the bass was really strong. The record I got by them is the cymbals sound like a garage, the trash can lids, man. But it's a great song and the bass is strong.
Yeah. So, bass is essential in the Cure, but
Did you guys make a band? If he's going to teach you, did you make a band? Find a drummer and make a band.
We kind of tried to just amongst friends. You know, it took a couple of years, but then eventually, actually, I realized early that I just wasn't going to get good until people expected me to do better. So I actually eventually joined a band in Torrance. And it was a very like Cure-like band, but this is a weird thing because I know last week you had my friend Mark Cisneros on your show.
He was talking about being in a Cure band.
Yes, we were in a Cure band together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was like my first like rhythm guitar player.
That's a guy I couldn't remember, you know, but I knew somebody was talking about the Cure not too long ago. It said they were at that fucking Rose Bowl gig. It was Mark Cisneros. Great game.
Yeah, we were both at that show.
Okay.
We were both at that show.
I believe you, Paul. So, but you and Mark, but did you know Mark before this? Now, he's in Land Empire, right? He's Whittier or some shit. But he told me he drove all the way out to Torrance to be in this band, yeah.
Yep, that's the band. He was, I met him through the band, and he was going to high school with, I think, the bass player's girlfriend. And he was actually, I would have to say, he was the first person that I met that was truly good at music. Like, he taught me so much about obsession and details and figuring out what the best part of a song is or the best part of a movie or, you know, all these things. Like, he was a, he was a, you know, he really helped me, like, sharpen my, I don't know, my eye or my ear,
you know,
or everything.
He has incredible focus, right? Later in life,
yep.
Right? He gets it, sends himself back to school for music, learns how to play everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an inspiring cat, Paul. So how long does you, because this ain't you guys' band. You guys are helping out these other cats, these cure people. So how long does this last for you? No, I'm not being negative. I didn't mean, look, I wear flannels because of Creedence, because I couldn't hear that bass, and I thought if I wore the singer's shirts, D Boone would still like me. I mean, you know, it's trippy about shit, especially when you're a little younger or more younger.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We were just kind of living out these dreams of being musicians. So we were in that band for a little bit, and then we left on our own.
Yeah.
And me, him, and Mike Flowers ended up starting a band, and that was a band for like 2 or 3 years. And I think we played maybe 2 shows.
What were you called?
And then we were called December, and we were kind of like a Cure New Order band. So we added New Order to the Cure thing.
Yeah, but it's
we
still had like England. Drum machine. It's okay. It's still England.
Yeah. I'll tell you the funniest thing that happened during that time.
You know, the English we guys, wanted... you know, they used to sing with U.S. accents. You know, it's all about showbiz, right?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Everybody wants to be who they're not.
Well, that's why my favorite holiday is Halloween, because it's the one day we pretend we're wearing fucking costumes. Or we don't pretend.
And it's okay.
We don't
pretend. Yeah. And it's okay. You could be whatever you want to be.
That's why I do gigs wearing that shit, even though I can't even breathe. I wear pumpkins on my head and shit. You know, sacrifice to some kind of ethic, some kind of fucking values. So anyway, the Sunburn only does 2 gigs, but a lot of practice.
Yeah, a lot of practice and, like, living, you know, like, they would come to my house on the weekends, and we'd be there, like, for 4 days just watching movies and practicing. But we just didn't, you know, like, I think Mark was he was really pushing us to get better, and I just wasn't, I was like, by that time I was like 20 or something, and I was just trying to figure out, like, my shit. It wasn't until like maybe like 5 years after that I got serious about guitar. I got into like Sonic Youth and Ornette Coleman.
What do you think did it? Why did it take 5 years from them? Even though you're around this cat, Mark Cisneros, who's fucking music personified.
Yeah, I don't know. I just,
you know what I think? It's still individual. You got to hear it inside when it's, you know, when it resonates. Even though it doesn't hurt to have bitching people around, you still got to find it inside you.
Yeah, I really needed to find
you, Paul.
I heard these things simultaneously. I got like, I don't know, I read some article and then I simultaneously got into all this stuff and I realized that I wanted to get a lot better, which was like King Crimson, Sonic Youth, Ornette Coleman. I think I got into those three at like the same month, and then I was just like, I want to get good at guitar. I want to be able to do this shit, you know. So actually, right then, I checked into a rehearsal space with Mark and some of his friends, and I was there. I finally put myself all into the music. I was there like 6 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Whoa!
I would jam with people that I didn't know. We ran through songs that I didn't know. I just learned and, you know, got my ass kicked, looked real bad, looked a fool. But after a year, I was reasonably good, and I had ambitions of like starting something like, you know, like a proggy type band.
But so, like a Paul Lai band, not join somebody else's band.
Right. So when I came back, that's actually when I started Upsilon Crux, when I was like 26 or 27 or whatever. And then
and who's the first guys in the band?
It was my friend Cameron Presley, who I knew from we both went to a Christian school. I'm not Christian, but we went to a Christian school, and he was the only other guy there that liked The Cure and, like, My Bloody Valentine. So, yeah.
Well, you know, the bass lady, Deb, was on.
From My Bloody Valentine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's super nice. Too.
And who else was in the band?
Well, I met Cameron. We started Up Flying Across with that idea, and then we got Jesse, the drummer, and then eventually we got a bass player who we kicked out like a year later. But it was the three of us, basically, me, Cameron, and Jesse.
And he who shall not be named.
his name was Tom. He was actually a good bass player, but
yeah,
you know, we're like,
things don't work out, of course.
Yeah.
Tom, a band is such a trippy chemistry, right? So what did you do first? Did you guys try playing other people's tunes, or did you have material for these guys?
We would jam, and I would play them records, you know, and I'd be like, I want to sound like this. They would always be like King Crimson, and then eventually Henry Cow, and then Magma. But it was also like Faust and Noy, and, you know, we listened to Sun Ra and Coltrane and Ornette. You know, I was trying to, like, combine the energy of those, like, three things that I thought were, like, the raddest shit in the world,
yeah,
and try to make a band out of that stuff. So I think initially we would have like, oh, this is the free jazz song, or this is the krautrock song, or this is like...
What, did you have the ska, you know, the song and the reggae song?
No. We just had those. It was just those three things, basically, okay, like prog, free jazz, and krautrock. That's what we were working from.
One time this basically. Cat came, I was over at Perk's Pad, and this cat came. He had done an entire ska version of Toot Tommy, the Who's... We got to listen to that thing. I shouldn't have said that. it's trippy when stylism is so big, right? It's like,
yeah,
it's kind of a, I don't know, it's like a Halloween mask. It's like, what, who's got the pumpkin head on, you know? Is it Watt? You know, is it his sister? I mean, it is trippy, but it is neat how you guys, while you were putting together the band, you went and listened to records to see what you guys wanted to make. I think that's interesting. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, the September 6, 2021 edition of the Watt Peters Show, special guest Paul Lai. Hold tight for hour two. September 6, 2021, second hour, Watt Peters Show.
I'm sorry.
for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with "So thereby and therefore, thus henceforth, mono, upsilon, acrux." Ben Salter out of Tasmania with "Strangers," brand new from him. Lucas Sabella from nearby Sydney with "Maserati." And finally, Upsilon Acrux with "Intimate Barbarian." So, can you remember the first Upsilon Acrux song you guys put together?
I think we did. I don't remember the name because we did a demo, and three of the songs had like vocoder on it, so it wasn't quite like us yet. And then we did one instrumental song, and we called it the Seven Song because it was in seven. And I think that, to me, that was like the first Upsilon Acrux song. Because before then, it was like a mix, like Stereolab with King Crimson, you know, but with also with still with some vocals. And then when we did the Seven Song, it was like,
you're talking,
I don't know,
about
like,
your versions of those, or were you using their actual parts?
No, there were songs. I mean, it just what it sounded like to me, because we were still
so you're kind of
so much
influenced.
Yeah, we were our influences. We hadn't really broken out to sound, you know.
Right.
But that was the first song that I thought, oh, this sounds like what we're gonna be, you know. It was like instrumental. It was weird. It had some noise in it, and then it had this big takeoff part.
Well, how far down the line was this demo? Did you do any gigs yet?
No, we hadn't done any. We hadn't done any gigs. We just did this demo. We thought we wouldn't. Okay, I have a great story about our first show. So we were doing this demo with our friends and stuff. And I used to see Glenn Galloway from Truman's Water at Lou's Records in Encinitas. I used to see him in the parking lot. And I had seen Truman's Water play. And I thought, fuck, this band is fucking incredible. Like, I love this band.
San Diego
and I
scene,
saw,
right?
What?
San Diego scene.
Yeah. Truman's Waters was they were the best band in San Diego by far. But I had seen them and I saw them in the parking lot.
Is that the Three Mile Pilot guys?
What?
Somebody Three Mile Pilot or?
I mean, Three Mile Pilot was around too, but
no,
I really
some of the guys do they some members exist in both bands or?
I don't think Truman's Water.
No, I'm asking you for help, Paul, because I don't. I'm kind of ignorant of the scene, but I know they're all good musicians and shit. I just don't know how they put together Drive Like Jehu and how they put together. And you did your first gig. You saw him in the parking lot.
Yeah, I saw him in the parking lot, Lewis, and I walked up to him. I said, "Hey, man, I just saw you like Tuesday at the Casbah, and you guys were incredible. I was wondering if you could help me get a show. I don't have anything to give you. I don't have a demo, but I can promise you this one thing. We will not suck, and it'll be different."
That's a good
And he
promise.
Goes, okay. And he gave me his number, and I called him later, and he set up a show like a week later.
Yeah.
And we played our first show at the Casbah with them.
Wow, Tim Mays.
Tim Mays. And,
no, he
and
had the
we
Spirit
killed
Club.
It.
You don't know how far back I go with that cat.
Yeah.
Long way. Good guy.
Yeah, we played a lot of first shows at Casbah.
No, but before he had something called The Spirit. It's called Brick by Brick now, I think, or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so was the gig a success? I mean, first you got, the man who got you the gig think? Did you live up to the promise?
Yeah, I mean, he loved it. It was amazing first show because I think our drummer was 20, so he couldn't even get into the Casbah, so he had to stand outside until we could play.
Right.
And then we killed it, and then somebody came up afterwards. It was John Goss from Physics, and he was like, "I want to put you guys out." And I'm like, "Oh, okay.
Wow
shit." He's like,
gig.
"I'm gonna set up a studio." Yeah, and I was like,
wow.
"Oh, so this is what it's like to be like in a band, you know?" Like, it was like the realization that because before then, the two shows that we had played as December.
Yeah.
We're like in the valley and somewhere, and you know they were pay to play gigs. We had to sell like 100 tickets, you know, $8 or whatever, you know.
Sure.
That our parents ended up paying for, you know.
Yeah.
So
you know, that's what the whiskey turned into shit. Can you believe?
I know
that?
It's
the
fucking,
whiskey was the best pad you could play, and it turned into a pay to play pad. Look, I want to play this Smells Klein.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Upsilon Acrux with Smells Klein. And we're going to keep it a secret, people, but there's a little pun rock involved there. Then we had a
don't lie.
Great, a man of deep meaning. Plaster Men after that from Ithaca with Photograph. Les Grisgris, Time Flies Still, Ration, Tape Code, Head Boggle, Fred's Traveling Fast, brand new out of Hokkaido, Car Thief School, Whole World, and finally Jesus Made My Fish Tank Boil, Upsilon Acrux. Okay, so you get the fucking invite to make this record.
Yeah.
Now, you'd already recorded the demo thing, but maybe a little more up. You said the guy's starting the studios?
He put us in a studio in San Diego, and we just went there like every night for like a month, like basically like 11 p.m., and we would be there till like, you know, I don't know, 6 a.m. or something. And then we recorded our first record and parts of our second record. And by then, we had already figured out that, like, okay, we're going to do this thing. And, you know, that ended up being our first record. I think it's called, like, you know, it's another pun too. It's like In the Acrux of the Upsilon King.
Ah.
Yeah.
And the King.
But, no. Yeah. The right. Crimson thing, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah. And then, you know, onwards from there, I guess, you know.
Some of that and then, Crimson got recycled by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a singer, and, you know, I think a King Crimson is the
also
band
the
that
words.
Started. What?
Pete Sinfield wrote words for a lot of those bands.
Yeah, he did.
Right. So, okay, do you guys start touring?
No, we didn't get into touring until, like, later on, because everybody had, except for me, had day jobs. So, yeah. We just didn't figure it out. We're kind of slow in figuring out that you need to tour and be nice and make friends and make peers. Like we were kind of outsiders in San Diego.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like fine with that. And I think we took that attitude and ran. And then we saw Hairy Pussy and we saw that like this negative energy could really, you know, accelerate a show. So I think we took on like negative energy for like 3-4 years. And it became like negative energy just turns into, you know, negative energy. So we had a really bad attitude. Like we'd play with our back to the audience, you know, and when we wouldn't say anything, wouldn't talk to any of the bands.
When I saw the fall, the singer was like that. I mean, it was his ass, his culo, the whole gig.
Yeah. It's a weird thing.
At the kick drum. Yeah. Well, so you said for 3 years though, what happened after 3 years?
It got so negative, like, I think our energy got so negative, and one guy was Cameron was kind of pushing it. We played South by Southwest, and he did something that I didn't like, and I started thinking, man, these people are helping us out, and, you know, you're clowning them or whatever. Like, it's just like, this is not going to help us, you know, like, in any way. Like, when I saw, you know, when people try to do something good for you, the last thing you should do is, like, spit in their eye, you know.
Absolutely. And maybe it takes a little touring to appreciate that because you need help of others and stuff. Yeah. So this isn't a musical thing. This is kind of bad people behavior thing.
Yeah, but, you know, like
it's important in a band mechanism. You got to, you know what I mean? The music can't thrive if there's bad people thing.
No, I agree. I think we had projected something, and then what we had projected had become our reality. And then once I realized the consequence of our reality, I wanted to move away from that. So we moved away from some people and started a new version with two drummers. And then things got better from there. We did do little tours, you know, and we played with the Ruins and you know, and touring started to become more of a possibility. And I started to realize, actually, after I went on tour with the Locust, I started realizing how important it is to have peers, have people that, like, look out for you, you know, that it was dumb to compete with people. And, you know, like,
No, we were so lucky. The Black Flag, Husker Du, Meat Puppet Guys. I mean, well, you know what? The scene was different, right? If we didn't help, it was just going to sink. So maybe it was just a sitch, and you guys were in a different thing where that could happen. So if we did that shit, it would never have got together. Anyway, we're at the end of the say. It's interesting to hear about this, Paul, man. You're bitching up. Open up, because a lot of people are embarrassed to talk about this kind of shit. End of the second hour, September 6, 2021, this Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Paul Lai. Hold tight for hour three. September 6, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro. Pedro Show. We start off the third hour with some Upsilon Acrux. And you know, all this Epsilon Acrux you gave me, it's different versions, right?
They're just from different albums. I just picked, I mean, I think most of them are from two albums.
So same personnel?
No, it's a different lineup with yeah, different lineup with every album actually.
Okay, we had Graf from the Netherlands after that, Duality, and then Upsilon Acrux, Remnants of the Habitable Epoch. Yeah, the drummer of Locust that played with. Oh yeah, he was helping out Butcherettes.
Yeah, Gabe. Was,
yeah. Gabe. Good cat. Okay.
Yeah.
Right now in Taipei, there is no Upsilon Acrux.
No.
I'm leading up to that. But between this San Diego time, you have time up here where I'm at, or even north of me, Los Angeles here.
Yeah.
And so, does Upsilon Acrux exist? A lot, is it a Los Angeles band for a while?
Yeah, it was, you know, I think for more than, I guess we moved to L.A. like around 2001 or 2002. And then eventually Jesse moved up there and then Upsilon Acrux was in L.A. And then whenever I got new versions of Upsilon, it was all in L.A. I mean, I moved to Taipei now 4 years ago.
Okay.
So okay. We did the European tour, and then I moved here.
Can I ask you about the way you put material together? When you started changing members, did that become more and more you? Or did you still, like, sit around listening to records? Hey, you guys want to... What do you think of that?
No. Okay. I mean, every time things switch, you know, the power dynamic switch.
Yeah.
I think initially it started kind of even, you know, where I brought, like, some ideas, but I didn't bring all the ideas, you know. But as people came in, they kind of looked to me to be like...
Rudder man.
To kind of... Yeah. So I started... It was good because eventually you become what people project you to be, you know. And it worked out for me because I realized I needed to be better all the time, and it kept me sharp.
Okay.
So I kept having these young guys come in, and they really... You know, some of these guys have been seeing me play for 5 years or whatever, you know. Because I'm like the only... I'm not the only, but I was the main Asian guy in LA doing weird stuff, like weird rock stuff that was really loud, you know. So, like the last version of the band, like Dylan and Noah and Patrick, those guys have been seeing me since they were in high school, you know. So when they came in, they really expected a lot, and I hate disappointing people, so
yeah.
I really wanted to be all that they needed me to be. So those things always helped me grow, because, I one of the things I truly hate is I hate to disappoint people. If people expect something of me, then I'm here to deliver or absolutely do my best to be that.
Especially cats who are going to try and aid and abet you on stage or in the studio.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just because you're the boss, you can holler at people and get your way like a buddy, you know, stomp your foot and make your hands like a sugar bowl or a teapot, you know, throw your little piece of chalk. But is that going to really get the best performances out of cats? There's a skill, right?
I've learned it. I've learned, you know, I figured it out because, you know, every time a band broke up, it was like some bad feelings, you know. And I think part of it was because sometimes I would yell or push people or whatever, you know. And I learned throughout the years that this is not the way, you know. Like, you know, you encourage people. If you want them to be, if you're looking out for their best interest,
yeah,
it's actually going to help you eventually. Because they know that you care about them, you know. And I care about these people. Sometimes I just didn't show it right. But by the last version of the band, which I may come back to, we're all brothers, you know. They play with my kids. They babysit my kid, my kids, you my, know, my kid, my know, one
Peter,
son.
I got a buddy, Peter DeStefano, and he's, you know, he's been reading up on John Coltrane. And John Coltrane said, if you're sincere, you can play a shoestring.
Well, I mean, whatever John says is the truth, you know, because I find that John is, you know, Coltrane to me is, you know, he's the greatest and the best musician of all time. And I truly believe he's a kind person. And
no, but these, you know, cats, these cats that are like playing with your kids and stuff, it's where their heart's at. That's the sincerity I think Mr. Coltrane was talking about.
Okay. I mean, and again, he's right and you're right, you know, because I don't know, when you believe in something and you play it wholeheartedly, you're not being forced to play it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thing that people can perceive and feel. And
yeah, you said musicians are after some kind of truth. You said a musician can tell when it's phony. I want to play Pitch Mountain Maps.
Oh, I'm
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Upsilon 8 Crux with Pitch Mountain Maps, favorite title. Then Thomas Helton, Jamie Branch, she was on the show a couple weeks ago. And the late, great Michael Evans, drummer man Michael Evans. He was on the show a few months ago and we lost him. Very sad. Man, what a beautiful spirit. Late to the Party, live at DMG, June 4, 2017. So it was a few years ago, but love you much, Michael Evans, truly. And then Zerpins.
Yeah.
Liminal Triad. Now, Zerpins, this is something that happens after you move, you make the move to Taipei, right?
Right. Yeah, I didn't want to practice. I was going to concentrate on being a dad. And so I wasn't going to play music at all. And then I got talked into playing a show. And then I was doing solo guitar shows. And then a friend of mine, Joseph Morrow, moved here from Rhode Island. And he started playing drums with me. And so I started doing improv shows with him. And I was learning how to do improv with him because he's such an awesome drummer. And then we started to see people around that I thought I could put together like a big improv band for a record. And so actually this band, the song comes from, the album that it comes from, it's like we actually only played together twice. It was like I had these ideas for timed improvisations, you know, so we were on the clock where something would come in at like 30 seconds or something would bounce out at like 45 seconds, whatever. I thought to make it more interesting while keeping it improv, you know, I thought it would be cool to do something that was like, I wouldn't tell you what to play. I'll only tell you when to play.
Yeah, I was part of a gig that was like that where the Meister had a control board of switches for light bulbs, and everyone had a light bulb in front of them. When that light bulb came on, it was your time to go.
So he was feeling out for that. I would kill for that.
Chris Schlarb, it was by UCLA, a little theater. Huh. Man, that was...
Yeah.
Because you didn't know when your light was going to come on, right? So you're kind of shitting a pecan log. It was interesting, though. I like this idea. Can I ask you, what's the connect with Steve at Cuneiform? How'd that happen?
Well, actually, I was aware of Cuneiform because they have the best prog stuff. And then, but he thought we were like a kids band, I think, for a long time. And then one time we played at Grandma's house in Oakland, like 2 o'clock in the morning. And, but it was shot on video. This is the early days of YouTube. And somebody put it up. It was like, 18 minutes long or something. And then the next day I got a message from Steve, was like, I saw your video. I love it. How can I help? And I was like, well, I mean,
we'd love to get a record. You've got to just doing gigs, you know, your first gig, your first video. That's how you get your records.
It's weird, you know. It's definitely
it's
weird.
Happened,
and Steve,
man.
I would consider
really
like, not just like a label guy. He, you know, Steve's like a friend, a mentor. You know, I think of him and I think who would know more about like odd technical music? You know, Steve has probably gotten 300 demos a year for 40, 50 years, you know, of the weirdest, craziest bands, you know. So, like, I mean, I think he's aware of basically everybody that can play, that put together something organized. Like, they sent it to him at some point, you know what I mean?
That's great. It's great. He's got an open mind. And no front, okay? If he tells you he's going to do it, it's not just fucking blowing smoke, right, up the yang.
Yeah.
It's fucking, he delivered.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, where can people find you on the internet?
Upsilon Crux, I think Cuneiform has all the digital stuff except for the new record.
You should spell the name of that for people. C-U-I.
He's going to get mad at me. It's Cuneiform. I think it's
C-U-N-E-I-F-O-R-M. We were in old time
Cuneiform. Cuneiform.
Yeah, if we were in old time Samaria, that's the writing. It's these little lines that are going up and down and sideways and shit. Cuneiform. Yeah. It's before hieroglyphics. This is the old timey.
Yeah.
So look that up, and it's the same word.
But if you want to hear the new stuff, you'd have to find it on Future Proof in Taiwan.
Okay.
It's run by this guy named Lars.
And what's what's the URL?
I don't know. It's just Future Proof, like as one word. If you just put like Future Proof Taipei,
Taiwan.
Cheryl.
Okay, or Taipei. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then my friend Joseph has this. He does these noise records, which I'm having a couple come out soon. It's called New Records as well. So I'm sorry to doing all this promo.
You got to get a Paul Lai website. And thanks. And whenever you get anything and you feel like people want to know about it, come on to Watt Pedro Show. Let him act like a flyer for you. People, it's been the September 6th, 2021 edition of Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.